All righty, welcome back in. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. I'll get to Daniel Jeremiah's latest mock draft in just a second. Pete Nakos, though, had a tweet out just a few moments ago, college sports business and transfer reporter, reporter for On3 Sports. So he put out this: when John Calipari left Kentucky for Arkansas, he secured major NIL funding. Now West Virginia's Darren DeVries is in the mix at Indiana, and NIL budget will factor in. It's flipped on its head in terms of what they're prioritizing with jobs. Now, you heard Darren, right, linked to the Iowa job, as Fran McCaffrey is now out at Iowa. He is now no longer or is not a candidate. I guess he told him thanks but no thanks. Because Pete also adds in this, Indiana spent over $5 million on this year's roster, while West Virginia's roster cleared $3 million. Sources tell On3 Sports, Iowa opened and the best players were making $300,000. That's bottom of the Big Ten. And I think what you're now going to see in the hiring cycle, and it's not what I think, I know what's going to happen, is that these coaches are going to say, if I go here, how much money are you guys spending? Who are your boosters? Who are your donors? Who are the big names associated with this university? Where if I come here, do you have the Tyson family like Arkansas has? Right? Not everyone could have that. Or is there a Mike Rapoli at St. John's that's going to get Rick Pitino who he wants? Right? You're going to need backing there. And if you are a popular coach, you're going to have to see the finances of it. And you're going to have to see, number one, how much money are you going to be able to work with, directly or not? And that's going to be a major thing. And Darren has a good job at West Virginia. You know, did a very good job at Drake. You know, got a good job at West Virginia. West Virginia is in a job that, oh, it's the biggest job in college basketball, but it's a pretty good job for where he's at in his career. Indiana has more of a name recognition. Indiana has also had a lot of coaches where it has not worked out. And they are one of those programs that they rest on what they used to be rather than what they are now, but they do have a very loyal and passionate alumni, right? They do. And you never know how that could work. You don't even have to be an alum. Look at Michigan, how they got Bryce Underwood that bag. It was, right, the girlfriend of the wife who went to Michigan, and we all know how that did go down because of who she is dating or married to right now. So that's something for these college coaches, where there's going to be a lot, there's always a lot of jumping around. But now when you jump around, it's going to be a lot about NIL. And for a school like Iowa, you got to increase those efforts if it's bottom of the barrel in the Big Ten at $300,000. When you got Indiana, they spent over $5 million on their roster this year, and West Virginia spent $3 million on their roster this year. So when the best players are making $300,000 at Iowa, that's the bottom of the Big Ten in this article by Pete. So good stuff by there. The college basketball coaching carousel, it's a very underrated one. You know, I think most of the time when we talk coaching carousel in this national radio landscape, it's usually NFL or college football. The college basketball in the last few years has been a whole lot of fun to watch, especially with how many big names have departed the sport. Coach K leaving, all right, replaced in-house by John Shire. Roy Williams leaving, replaced in-house by Hubert Davis. Jay Wright left. And I know Kyle Neptune just got fired after 3 years, but he was at Fordham and then goes back to Villanova. You keep it inside the family. So we've seen a lot of names and a lot of, well, more so bigger jobs available the last few years because a lot of these legendary coaches just go, yeah, I'm good with this NIL stuff. And when Roy Williams and Coach K retire, it's like, okay, right, older guy. Makes sense. When Jay Wright leaves the sport at the top of his game after a Final Four run when already having two natties underneath his belt, and he leaves because of the NIL stuff, that's when it shows you it's really a new game in college basketball. So you got Villanova open, you got Virginia open, you got Indiana open. We'll see what happens, obviously, with Virginia too. So you got Virginia, Indiana, Villanova. You got Iowa. You got some good jobs open up here, and there could be some more names on the move. Fanta joined us yesterday. He said, don't be surprised if Mick Cronin leaves UCLA. So then UCLA could be open. You know, there's talks about Buzz Williams potentially leaving as well. So there could be some more jobs opening up around the college basketball landscape. So let's get to Daniel Jeremiah's latest mock draft. So Daniel Jeremiah, as good as they come with this mock draft stuff, he had Cam Ward go number one to Tennessee. At this point, I think the draft, it really, in terms of players, I think it starts at two. The only question about one is if Tennessee's going to keep the pick or do they trade it to the Giants. Either way, I think Cam Ward's going one. So then at two, this is where the real fun starts just in terms of players. And he had the Browns actually still taking Abdul Carter. However, I think Abdul Carter is the preeminent player in this draft, but you just were able to keep Myles Garrett. You don't have a quarterback. Travis Hunter is still on the board. I thought maybe because of the position, maybe this takes him out of the Abdul Carter sweepstakes. But if I'm Cleveland, as I said earlier, even though I do not think Shador Sanders is a better player than Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter, I would take Shador Sanders with the second overall pick because Cleveland right now, you had a good roster for years. You didn't have the quarterback. You know, I know Baker, right, is now viewed better than what he was in Cleveland. And I think he's taken a bigger step the last 2 years in Tampa Bay. He was good, not great. Cleveland swung and they missed and then some on Deshaun Watson. You need hope again at this quarterback position. So for them, even though I don't think Shador should be the second player in the draft, needing a quarterback makes you do some things. And you're Cleveland. You take a 9,000 risk throughout the years. Why not take another one? Why not make it 9,001 and just draft Shador Sanders with the number two overall pick? That's what I would do. But Daniel Jeremiah goes Cam Ward 1, Abdul Carter 2. He then has the Giants in at 3 taking Shador Sanders. Now, there's a few things here. If Shador is available, I think the Giants have to take him. Because I don't anticipate Aaron Rodgers going to the Giants. I think it's a very slim chance that Aaron Rodgers goes to the Giants. I think he's going to be a Pittsburgh Steeler. When we find that out, who the heck knows? If we don't know where Aaron Rodgers is quarterbacking by the draft, I would hope the Pittsburgh Steelers have enough pride to tell Aaron Rodgers to go kick rocks, number one. But assuming, and this is what I'm doing, assuming Aaron Rodgers isn't going to the Giants, then what do the Giants do? I would think Russell Wilson. Does anyone change their opinion about Brian Daboll or Joe Shane if the Giants sign Russell Wilson? No. I think there will be very below average results with Russell Wilson as your quarterback with only Malik Nabers to throw the football to. So if I'm Joe Shane, if I'm Brian Daboll and both of their Heinies are on the hot seat, I'm sitting there trying to say, how could I elongate my job here in the NFL? And that would be taking a quarterback. You tried last year. You weren't in range to get Jaden Daniels or Drake May. You couldn't execute the trade. For whatever reasons, you didn't take J.J. McCarthy. You didn't take Bo Nix. You didn't take Michael Penix Jr. You did get Malik Nabers. So there is a positive there. But you need a quarterback. And they originally declined that fifth-year option on Daniel Jones. Then Jones makes the playoffs, wins a playoff game. They have to give him a new contract. Then that blows up in their face. No one ever thought Daniel Jones was really the guy, not even those guys running the Giants organization. And last year they got shut out of the quarterback market. You got to give yourself, if you're Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, and they're not your resources, so if you got to trade up to go do it, be my guess. You know, because if you don't get the job done this year, then those resources won't be yours, a year from now. So they are treading water. Their heads keep on going underneath, but they keep on coming back up for air. So if I'm the Giants and you can't get Rodgers, you bring in a Russell Wilson, but then if Russ doesn't cut it 2 weeks in, or, 2 months in, and this season once again is going south, you need to do a last second, a last ditch resort to save yourself. And if Shador could come in like the final 8 games of the season or so, the last half of the season, and play well, maybe that elicits enough hope where the Mara family goes, you know what, we'll actually keep Daboll and Shane for another year. The Giants have to get somewhat of a big name or a long-term plan at the quarterback position. Russ is not a big enough name anymore. He's not a long-term plan. Aaron Rodgers is not a long-term plan, but he is a big enough name, even though his play on the field doesn't suggest that anymore. And it doesn't meet up with that. But if you go draft Shador Sanders, that's a long-term plan. So Daniel Jeremiah had Shador Sanders going 3. And then as the Patriots going forward, Travis Hunter. And I'd be curious on how the Patriots would use Travis Hunter. Because the Patriots, I thought they would be active on the wide receiver market. They've been trying, but they haven't been able to get a deal done. Couldn't get Cooper Kupp. T. Higgins back with the Bengals. Nothing moving right now on the Brandon Ayuk front. Chris Godwin, they offered him a boatload of cash, but he wanted to stay on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers pirate ship. So Daniel Jeremiah is the Patriot drafting Travis Hunter in F4. Now, if you could pair up, and remember, they just signed Carlton Davis, and they have Christian Gonzalez. So that's as good of a 1-2 punch at the cornerback position in the NFL. You know, Christian Gonzalez is phenomenal. He is a top 5 corner already, top 10 corner, top 5, I would say, already in the NFL. He is phenomenal, Christian Gonzalez. And you have Carlton Davis, who went on the field. He's a good corner. So that's a good 1-2 punch. So how would the Patriots then use Travis Hunter? They have a big need at wide receiver. And you get a different answer every ask. I think the way that Travis Hunter probably would be ideally used in the NFL, would be corner first, and then you give him 20 plays a game, 15 plays a game as a wide receiver. But the need by the Patriots is clearly more at wide receiver than corner. So Daniel Jeremiah's first 5 picks in the draft, he has Tennessee taking Cam Ward, Cleveland going with Abdul Carter, Shedeur Sanders going to the Giants, Patriots taking Travis Hunter, and then he has Jalen Walker going to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So another edge rusher for the Jaguars. You have Trayvon Walker, you have Josh Hines-Allen, now you're going with Jalen Walker. I look at that, and that's a draft pick that I say to myself, if you're going to go defense there, wouldn't you be better up beefing up your defensive line and addressing the middle of it? I would think Mason Graham, to me, would be the better fit there for Jacksonville. But that's just me. Raiders at 6, Ashton Jeanty. I think I'm the biggest Ashton Jeanty fan on the planet that doesn't live in Boise. I would think 6 is a little early for Ashton Jeanty. Now, the Raiders could look at that. Okay, we got Geno Smith. We got Brock Bowers. Our best receiver right now is Jacoby Myers. You don't have much at the running back position. The Raiders have so many holes. But when you have so many holes, do you really want to use all that on a running back with a pick that early when you could address it in other areas? Now, at that rate, with who's on the board, do I think Jeanty's the best player? No. Is he close to being the best player on the board? Yes. I personally have Mason Graham right in front of him. And you could put Tyler Warren into the conversation as well. But I don't think the Raiders are taking Tyler Warren because they have Brock Bowers. So Jeanty at 6, that tells me that they're going to be a run-first team. Because the quarterback is fine in Geno Smith. That's not your long-term option. Ashton Jeanty, then the identity of that offense could really be run, run, run with how much of a workhorse and a bell cow back that he was at Boise State. 7, the Jets, they go offense lineman Aramembu, Missouri, who's been rising up the draft boards since the combine. You know, the Jets taking another offense lineman in the draft. Tell me another day that ends in Y. Carolina then has Mason Graham falling to 8. If Mason Graham falls to 8, that's a sensational pick for the Carolina Panthers. I would argue that Mason Graham, to me, is the 3rd best player in this draft. I would say 1, Abdul Carter, 2, Travis Hunter, and then 3, Mason Graham. If I'm just going pound for pound, best players in the draft. And then I would, you know, probably put Ashton Jeanty 4 and then Tyler Warren 5. Those would be my 5 best players in this draft. But I look at Mason Graham. You know, you put him and Derek Brown in the same defensive line. I know the Panthers have a lot of holes, but man, that could be a great 1-2 punch in the defensive line. Then you have Jahad Campbell, Alabama linebacker, going 9 to the Saints. Will Campbell going 10 to the Chicago Bears. So that's the top 10 for Daniel Jeremiah. Now let's see other notable picks. Tyler Warren going 14th to the Indianapolis Colts. Who's throwing the football for them? Could be Anthony Richardson to start the season. Then it could be Daniel Jones after that. Will Johnson, I think the injuries catch up to him. They have him projected falling all the way to 15th pick to Atlanta. Be a good pick, good value pick there by Atlanta, because many people before the season started had Will Johnson going in the top 5 of the draft. Other notable names, Colston Loveland going to Seattle with the 18th pick. I'm not the biggest fan of Colston Loveland in the NFL. Obviously, I liked him at Michigan, but he didn't pop off to me how I thought he was going to when they first got him. Omarion Hampton going to the Broncos in at 20th. I think he's going to be a first-round running back. He is a dual-threat running back, not only running the football, but catching the ball out of the backfield. And the Broncos could use something now. Is Javonte Williams, I don't think he's still there. But that was a UNC running back that they took a little while back. Yeah, he's with the Dallas Cowboys now. But Omarion Hampton, you put him with Bo Nix, that'd be a pretty good 1-2 punch for the Denver Broncos. Then here's a notable one, Jackson Dart going to Pittsburgh at 21. And I talked about that earlier. If I'm looking at the draft board, I don't think Jackson Dart should be in the top 10. I don't think he should be in the top 15. The first team I look at it outside of the top 15 where I say to myself, okay, I could see it. And really the only team, because now the Steelers, the Seahawks are out of it with them getting Sam Darnold, the Pittsburgh Steelers in at 21. And DJ Daniel Jeremiah's Jackson Dart going 21 to the Steelers. Tatora McMillan, the wide receiver out of Arizona, like a month and a half ago, he's a top 10 pick, top 15 pick. Daniel Jeremiah has him fall all the way to 22. And this is what DJ said. I wouldn't be shocked if McMillan goes in the top 8 picks or if he slides into this section of round 1. There is a wide range of potential landing spots for the former Arizona star, but the team that drafts him will be getting a receiver with incredible size, body control, and ball skills. So you could team up Ladd McConkey. Let me tell you what about that Ladd McConkey and McMillan. That would be a fun 1-2 punch. Any other notable picks here? Ooh, Kelvin Banks falling all the way to 25 to Texans. So he stays in the state of Texas, and that's your replacement for Laramie Tunsil. And then Mykel Williams falling all the way to 28, the edge rusher out of Georgia to the Detroit Lions. And then Kenneth Grant, oh, that would be a steal. I have a top 15 grade on Kenneth Grant. I think Kenneth Grant's going to be a stud. Daniel Jeremiah has him going 30th to the Buffalo Bills. And then Shamar Stewart, who was rising after the combine, right, in all these mock drafts, Eagles 32. Like the Eagles, you know, need another good defensive player that falls in the draft when people thought that maybe he should have been picked a little bit earlier. So there you go on that front on the Daniel Jeremiah latest mock draft. Hey, by the way, with the Eagles, congratulations to a friend of the show in Brandon Graham. I got a chance to catch up with him a few times during Super Bowl week. I saw him in the team hotel because that's where we're staying. And BG kind of gave me a wink when I said, are you playing? He wouldn't give me a yes or a no, but he just kind of winked at me. So that basically told me that Brandon Graham was going to play. But, you know, it's weird when I root for the Patriots to love Brandon Graham as much as I do. Because he strip-sacked my quarterback, Tom Brady, and prevented Tom Brady from winning another Super Bowl. But living in Philadelphia as long as I did, covering the Eagles too, there is maybe, I don't know how many more genuine people I've been around in the game of football than Brandon Graham. Dude is an unbelievable leader, unbelievable story. First round pick out of Michigan. Eagles fans killed him the first few years because he didn't play well. Earl Thomas was a stud and people thought they should have drafted him. And Brandon Graham goes on to be one of the more important players in the history of the Eagles franchise. He's the biggest player in the history of the franchise. He strip sacked Tom Brady, all right, to win them their first Super Bowl. And then had the injury after having what was an awesome season this year, comes back, plays in the Super Bowl, wins another Super Bowl, and he elected to ride off into the sunset today. So two Super Bowl championships, turned his career around, and will go down as, you know, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, to be clear, but he'll go down as one of the most legendary Philadelphia Eagles of all time. So congratulations to a friend of the show in Brandon Graham announcing his retirement today. I listened to his entire press conference, real emotional, genuine stuff, and that's who BG is. So congratulations to Brandon Graham. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come on back. We'll do a little overreaction, proper reaction. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network.
Another NFL week is complete, which means it's another week to freak out about your favorite team. Which takes are truly crazy.
But sometimes a game can be so bad, it's almost good. You know what I'm saying?
No. And which are so crazy, they might be right.
He's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
Zach lets you know in this week's edition of Overreaction or Proper Reaction.
All right, little overreaction, proper reaction on a Tuesday. Let's get to Sampto. Here we go.
All right, well, let's start out here with Stephon Diggs. As we know, he's a free agent coming off a torn ACL after being traded from Buffalo to Houston last offseason. Now, Diggs, who clearly was unhappy in Buffalo and scrubbed all of his Bills photos and posts from social media after the trade, he has now re-edited all the Bills content back.
Oh, stop.
Fueling speculation that he could return to Buffalo. Overreaction, proper reaction. The Bills should sign Diggs back this offseason.
Going to be a big wings week for me, by the way. Thursday, I'm going to John Rothstein's favorite place for wings, which was called Bar Coastal. Now it's Plug Uglies, but it's the same menu as Bar Coastal. So I'm going there, getting the Curry's Way wings, and I'm taking a little trip to the Poconos this weekend. Just a day trip with a few buddies, and I'm going to one of my favorite wing spots called BVH, which has the legendary Johnny Hot Sauce. And those wings are just absolutely delicious, and it's a big sports bar there. So I'm going to watch some of the NCAA tournament there on Saturday. So a lot of wings, a lot of blue cheese, a lot of wings. That's what I think of when I think of Buffalo. But Stephon Diggs should not be able to enjoy those wings of Buffalo anymore. He was a cancer at the end in the locker room. He was a good teammate before then, right? Josh Allen did wonders for his career. He did wonders for Josh Allen's career. Clearly, there was an issue, though, between the two at the end. Now, can people mature? Can people change? Sure. But we've seen a pattern with Stephon Diggs. Goes to Minnesota, there's an expiration date. Then wants out of Minnesota, has a problem. Goes to Buffalo, there's an expiration date. Then he has a problem. And then unfortunately got hurt this year. I don't think the Bills showed this year they don't need Stephon Diggs. They can get back to the AFC Championship game and lose the AFC Championship game again without Stephon Diggs. So I would say even if Stephon reaches out, he tries to do the whole take me back. Thanks, but no thanks. We're good without you. So the Bills should sign Stephon Diggs back this offseason. Absolutely not. I will go overreaction.
Now, the Eagles, they won the Super Bowl thanks to a young core of stars. But like every winning team, Philly lost a ton this offseason. Starters like Mekhi Becton, Josh Sweat, Milton Williams, Darius Slay, CJ Gardner-Johnson, and Isaiah Rodgers are all gone, as is offensive coordinator Kalen Moore off to New Orleans. Now, early this afternoon, as you discussed, friend of the show Brandon Graham officially announced his retirement.
I walked into this city as a young man with dreams, big dreams, a little bit of nervousness, and a whole lot of fire in my heart. I had no idea back then what this journey would bring. I didn't know how many times I would be tested. I didn't know how much I would grow. And I surely didn't know how deeply I would fall in love with these fans and the team in this city. Philadelphia, and everybody, from the bottom of my heart, I just want to thank y'all. E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly. My last one. BG out, baby.
I have one criticism of that.
Uh-oh. He spelled Eagles right?
And I listened to the entire press conference. It was very moving stuff. But when he did the Eagles chant at the end, and that's just the way that Brandon Graham speaks. He's like the nicest guy. He always sounds nice and he'll rip your head off on the football field. But you got to give like the E-A-G-L-E-S Eagles. You can't just basically say it in your normal cadence in the voice. That's the only gripe. 9.9 out of 10 in the retirement speech up until he tried to spell Eagles. At least he got the spelling right.
I will say his last official words as a Philadelphia Eagle were, BG out.
That's pretty boss.
That's epic.
Whenever I leave the Infinity Sports Network, ZG out. I guess I got to say peace.
Well, especially the last time, whenever that ends up being, ZG out.
Until like 3 months.
MS out.
Because the last time I left, I was gone for 3 months. Just when I was out, they sucked me back in.
That's right? What happens. Now, overreaction, proper reaction. The Eagles will take a step back in 2025 after everything they've lost.
So what do you consider taking a step back? Like, if they don't win the Super Bowl, that's a step back, right?
Not necessarily. Like, if the Eagles...
Well, I still view them as an elite team, a top three team in the NFC. Is that the standard?
Will they be the... I mean, they were the best team in the NFC last year, right? Pretty clear. Will they be the best team in the NFC? Will they be a top two or three team in the NFC? They don't have to win the Super Bowl to take a step back.
So then overreaction. Because I think they will be, they may not win the Super Bowl. They may not go as far as what they did last year, right? They could lose the NFC Championship game. They could even lose in the divisional round. But you look at that team and that nucleus, you still got Saquon Barkley. You also got Jalen Hurts. You got A.J. Brown. You got Devontae Smith. You got Lane Johnson. You know, your offensive line's unbelievable, even with losing Becton. And you look defensively, you got Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith. You still got Cooper DeJean. So, and N'Kobe Dean coming off the injury. He was very good before he got hurt. You still got a ton there. Oh, you kept Zach Bond, by the way. This is what, like, it's amazing what people get upset about. Oh, they lost a lot. Yeah, you win, you lose things. You lose coordinators. You lose players. But they still have an unbelievable team. So I'll go overreaction there.
All right,
I have a proper reaction overreaction for you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's do it.
question, just for people keeping score at home. When did you shave? Because until the YouTube chat just brought this up, Billy Wolf, I had no clue that you got rid of this beard.
This is like 2 weeks ago.
Really?
No. I shaved this weekend. But still, you saw me yesterday and still had no idea.
Yeah, Monday. Had no clue that Moist Mike elected to take that hot towel and go get a shave. Overreaction or proper reaction? Alex's arm. You like Michael Samter better with the beard.
No, I actually kind of like the scruff. I don't like yesterday it was more clean shaven.
It was too much baby face?
That was a bit scary.
Okay.
But I like the scruff.
So you like the scruff. You think the bushy beard, he maybe look a little homeless?
No, it's not that. It's just,
will you ever say like a mean word about someone? Just wondering.
I was going to give an explanation.
Yeah. But Azarm's like, yeah, just wait till you leave at 6 o'clock. I'll stab you in the back. All right, continue what you had to say about
that. No, it's just that during COVID, like, my dad never grew out a beard.
Okay.
And then he did. And I'm like, yeah, it actually kind of suits you.
I grew out a beard during COVID. My hair was going, over my ears because, none of the barber shops were open. I actually hired someone to come to my house to cut my hair after a while because I was just losing my mind. Absolutely losing my mind.
It was more my hair during COVID. I had a man bun for a couple weeks.
Did you really?
Yeah,
oh, so you were like a wannabe soccer player.
Yeah.
You're finally living out your dreams.
I had a full-on fro. You ever see my pictures of me from the pandemic?
No, I don't think so.
Full-on fro.
Oh, yeah. Didn't you look like the famous painter?
Oh, Bob Ross?
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of beard.
The famous painter.
Yeah. The famous painter. Bob Ross. I'm going to paint a little tree right here. He's going to live very happily.
You did look very Bob Ross-like during COVID.
Yeah.
I will say that. All right. Next question.
All right, well, your Patriots may be stuck in no man's land in the draft, sitting at number 4 and hoping either Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter fall to them. However, some reports say the Pats would look to trade back if both players are gone. Now, Sports Illustrated proposed a trade in which the Patriots would trade the 4th pick to San Francisco for Brandon Ayuk, the 11th pick, and a second round pick so that the Niners can move up for Carter or Hunter. Overreaction, proper reaction. The Pats should make that trade even if Carter and Hunter are still on the board.
I'm taking a 30-second timeout. So this trade is they would swap ones and then also give up a second? That's the deal? Swap ones and give up a second?
And Brandon Ayuk.
Well, they would be getting Brandon Ayuk, yeah.
No. So the Patriots would only be giving up the 4th pick. They would be getting Ayuk, the 11th, and a second rounder.
Oh, okay. I misread this then. Because if I was going to say to get Brandon Ayuk, I'd have to swap ones and give up a 2. No, thank you. Who? So this is only if Hunter and Abdul Carter are off the board.
No, so apparently the Niners want one of those 2.
Oh,
so
okay.
The Niners would want to move up to get one of those 2. So if you're the Patriots and Carter.
So I'm passing up on Carter or Hunter.
Correct.
Then no. And if Carter and Hunter are off the board, I would actually think about that. I would not want to move back from 4 to 11 because I think that's going a little bit too far back. But if you're telling me I can't get Carter or Hunter, I could still probably get an offensive lineman at 11 and I'd be getting Brandon Ayuk, his contract, and a second round pick that I could live with. But if Carter and Hunter are still on the board there, yeah, that's the Pat should make this trade even if Carter Hunter is still on the board. That is a overreaction.
Now, many, not you, though, have ripped the Bengals for giving both Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins huge deals, thinking that they would have to trade star rusher Trey Hendrickson, who, of course, he requested a trade.
Mm-hmm.
However, now The Athletic is reporting that the team and Hendrickson are working on a deal to keep
Diana Rossini is reporting this.
Huh?
Diana Rossini is reporting this from The Athletic.
Oh, so it's from Diana Rossini. Okay, yes, great.
But, no. Diana Rossini and Chase Daniel.
Yeah,
these social media videos that they put out that are a minute long, I don't know if it's just the cadence that is weird to me, but I have no reason to hate Chase Daniel, but Chase Daniel in these videos are absolutely insufferable. Absolutely. He almost looks just like he has no clue what's going on, and then he gives this crazy take. These videos, I'm kind of laughing at them, and Rossini is very plugged in. But a lot of them are coming off as clickbaity kind of videos. That's all I'll say on that.
I mean, she is plugged in and he is kind of a hot take guy, but it's a good combination because you get both sides of it, I guess.
I don't know. Any of those videos, I find myself just yelling.
Well, so
yelling and punching the air.
Well, listen, at the end of the day, I think that's kind of what they want. The whole idea of getting you to yell and punch the air is the goal, maybe. Mm-hmm. Now, overreaction, proper reaction. If the Bengals keep Hendrickson, you would consider them a top three team in the AFC.
That's an overreaction because I would still put the top three teams in the NFL right now. The Kansas City, how about those Chiefs? The Buffalo Bills and the Baltimore Ravens. They're more complete teams than the Cincinnati Bengals. Even if the Bengals keep Trey Hendrickson, we saw what happened last year. Their defense is still Swiss cheese. So that's a overreaction for me.
Now, secondary question. Who do you have more faith in the playoffs, the Bengals or the Ravens?
The Bengals. Because I just trust Joe Burrow more.
So it's interesting that we consider the Ravens the better team, but we have more faith in the Bengals.
Well, you know, I defended Lamar as long as I could. The last 2 years, home AFC championship game, Mahomes tells me after the game he knew he just had to be a game manager in order to get that victory. That offense did squat. And I know you could also blame Monken and Zay Flowers in that one. And then this year, forget about the Chiefs. You lost to the Bills, too. So, yeah, I know that it's been a while, and Burrow, they got to get off to better starts, and they got to protect him, and he's got to stay healthy. But when he's in the postseason, the dude gets the AFC championship game bare minimum, it feels like. So, beat Buffalo. I can't really credit them getting that victory up against the Ravens because Huntley was playing. But they've also beat Kansas City, and they've been in a Super Bowl. So, yeah, Burrow, in one game, I have more confidence in the Lamar Jackson.
Now, last one, we talked about Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft. Well, the great Mel Kiper released his latest first-round mock draft.
Todd.
And he had a big, big surprise in the top 10 with the Saints drafting your favorite quarterback, Jackson Dart, ninth overall.
I think I'm Tracy Morgan. I'm getting food poisoning.
Now, Dart's been flying up draft boards since the combine and has emerged as the clear number three quarterback, although Aaron Murray thinks Jalen Milroe is number three. The Saints did just restructure Derek Carr's contract that would make it tough to get rid of him after the 2026. Now, listen, we know now how you feel about Jackson Dart going ninth overall, so I'm going to kind of change the question up here. Mm-hmm. But do you think the Saints should draft a quarterback in the first two rounds? Overreaction, proper reaction, the Saints should draft a quarterback in the first two rounds.
I'm going to go overreaction. If they take Jackson Dart at 9, I'm going to erupt on draft night like it's a volcano. And there's going to be a lot of takes on the internet from you, boy. The second round pick, I could see it, but I don't love any of these quarterbacks. And Derek Carr, even though we crap on him a lot, he's not great. He's not horrible, though. So let him be a stopgap guy another year. They have a lot of holes. I would use that elsewhere. That would just be me. Alrighty, Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. Come on back. We got one more segment to play. Update time first. Here's the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. I have a very boring bracket this year. So, you know, like I did roll with a few upsets in the first round. Like I'm not going to give you like a 10 beating a 7 or a 9 beating an 8. Like I'm talking about actual upsets. I took Colorado State to beat Memphis. I took Drake to beat Missouri. Other notable upsets, Yale to beat A&M. Everyone's on UC San Diego to defeat Michigan. I did not take them. I actually put Michigan in the Sweet 16. Other notable upsets in the first. I took High Point over Purdue. And that's pretty much it in terms of the big upsets. Now, my Sweet 16, I have Auburn, Michigan, Ole Miss, Michigan State in that South region. So Auburn, Michigan, Ole Miss, Michigan State. I have Michigan State defeating Ole Miss and then Auburn defeating Michigan. So that leads to a 1-2 Auburn and Michigan State. I have the Sparty Party with Tom Izzo going to the Final Four. Now, this region, up until the last 2-3 weeks, I was all in on Auburn. The way that Auburn lost in the SEC tournament, how they just could not finish, that was a cause for concern. It's not that they just lost 3 out of their last 4. It's how they lost that last game. They didn't play their best brand of basketball, and they still had a chance to win, and they couldn't get the job done. So that was concerning. You know, if there's going to be a region of chaos, like a 6 seed or a 7 seed or an 8 seed. You know, like a higher seed going to the Final Four, this would be the region, I think. I think there could be a lot of funky stuff to go on in this region, but everyone's going to pick either Auburn or Michigan State. I ended up going Michigan State. In the West, I tried to do something outside of Florida and St. John's. I couldn't get there. I took Florida, Maryland, Texas Tech, and St. John's. Lame, 1, 2, 3, 4 in the Sweet 16. I have the Johnnies. I love that kid Zuby. And I got a chance to see him in person a few times at the Big East tournament. You know, RJ Lewis is the Big East player of the year. But Zuby Ojafor, he was unbelievable. Aaron Scott of St. John's, he's someone that I think is going to be their difference maker in this NCAA tournament. And either his shots are going to fall, they're not. But I have St. John's finding a way to get to the Elite Eight where they're going to just come up short to Florida. I have Florida going to the Final Four. Right now, Florida's playing the best basketball in the country. So give me Florida matching up against Michigan State in San Antonio in the Final Four. Sweet 16 in the East. I have Duke, Oregon, BYU, Alabama. So that gets a little funky. So I got 1-2, but you got 5-6. And I have then lame 1-2, I know, Duke, Alabama playing. I don't think they're, even though Florida's playing the best basketball in the country right now, I don't think there's a better team for pound for pound in the country than Duke right now. So I have Duke beating Alabama, Duke going to the Final Four. Now, I get to the Midwest. My Sweet 16. This could be the funkiest Sweet 16 that I have. Starts off with the 1 in Houston, a 5 in Clemson, 6 Illinois, 10 Utah State. I then have Houston going up against Illinois in the Elite Eight, Houston going to the Final Four. I know, right? You have all these one seed. I had 3 1 seeds and a 2 going to the Final Four. Lame, I know. But on the right side of the bracket, if we're sitting in San Antonio doing the shows on Thursday and Friday, and Duke's not there, I'll be stunned. And also if Houston's not there. Like, Houston's toughest matchup potentially to get to the Final Four is Tennessee. I'm sorry. You know, I know Tennessee plays in the SEC. I'm not trusting Rick Barnes in a big game. And also, it's like, all right, Clemson has some experience. You know, some people picking Will Wade to win that matchup against McNeese. Purdue doesn't intimidate me. You know, I like Casper from Illinois. But you could argue that Houston's toughest matchup is just getting by Gonzaga in the second round, the round of 32 in that region, if Gonzaga defeats Georgia. So my Final Four, I know it's not exciting in terms of, ooh, you got some crazy seed there. But if you give me a Final Four of Michigan State, Florida, Duke, Houston, I'm very happy as a college basketball fan. Because here's what you realize. Early on in the tournament, sure, it's awesome Loyola Chicago wins, right? It's awesome when you get some of these Cinderella stories. And hey, if they could take it to a national championship game and you get a national championship game like we saw between Duke and Butler, and Butler, right, the Gordon Hayward shot at the end would have been the greatest shot of the history of the NCAA tournament, and it just did not fall. Like, you give me Cinderellas like that that end up giving us games like that, I'm all for it. I love to see as far as a Cinderella could go. But if you're asking me what makes the better tournament, it's early upsets in the first or second round. And then once you get towards the Sweet 16, then I want the bigger boys to prevail. And if you give me 3 1s and a 2 in the Final Four, I think it makes for a more watchable, compelling, and a lesser chance of a blowout in the Final Four. Like, could Florida run Michigan State off the court? Absolutely. But if you give me Duke Houston, I don't care what the number is, I'm hammering the over. I'll make myself a cocktail, have some nachos, some wings, enjoy that semifinal game, and I'd be very happy watching Duke and Houston because there's going to be a lot of points. So in my Final Four, Florida, Michigan State, I have Florida advancing to the national championship game. I got Duke and Houston. I have Duke defeating Houston, and that leads what I think would be an epic national championship game between Duke and Florida. And I would then take the Dukies to defeat Florida, the Blue Devils to defeat the Gators. And I think Duke would win the game by 2 points. You know, we'll see when Cooper Flagg comes back. I think it's John Shire's time to go win a national championship. He's had good teams the last few years. Now you got to get the job done in March. When they're healthy, and even when they're not healthy, we just saw them run through the ACC. I don't think there's a better team in the country this year than Duke. So I feel like a lot of people are picking the same Final Four, so that means there will be a ton of chaos. But I got Michigan State, Florida, Duke, Houston, Florida, Duke, national championship game, and Duke winning it all by 2 points. So that's what I'm rocking and rolling with in my bracket. Alrighty, that will do it for a Tuesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Big thanks to Aaron Murray for stopping by, doing a little prospect profile on the three Georgia players that are projected to go in the first round. Fun show today. We opened it up talking about the Cleveland Browns. Well, I'm all in on them taking Shedeur Sanders at two. We did the five college basketball coaches under the most pressure in the NCAA tournament this year. And we did our Aaron Rodgers pie chart too. 65% chance with the Steelers, 23% chance with the New York Football Giants, 10% chance going to Minnesota, and then 2% retiring. Once again, we got new phone lines here at the network, all throughout the network. If you want to call, 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Alex Azarn, thank you very much. Michael Samter, thank you very much. Rich Ackerman, thank you very much. And each and every one of you for listening, calling, tweeting, YouTube chatting, however you consume the show, we appreciate you. We'll be back tomorrow on a hump day on a Wednesday. Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.